from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, back in the Legacy Le Show Dome, the world headquarters of Le Show, in the home of the homeless, and some refurbishment going on in the Le Show Dome, proud to say, to bring it up to snuff with the rest of modern Santa Monica architecture, which, I don't know if you've been here, but it neatly sort of just the meeting place of, in terms of architectural style, between brutalism and twee. So the Le Show, we're bringing the Le Show Dome up to that standard. This week, the General Accounting, or the Government Accountability Office, its new name, and congratulations on the new name, by the way, reported that the financial crisis that began in 2008 has a price tag. They've costed it out. That's what these guys do. That's why they get the little bucks. And the figure they've come up with is as much as, are you sitting down? Well, stand up. $22 trillion. $22 trillion. And still, no chief executive of a financial institution which engaged in the, let's be kind, chicanery that cost this country $22 trillion. No chief executive or operating officer has been prosecuted, let alone put in the pokey. So if you steal $22 from a liquor store, they throw the book at you. If you manage to cheat the country out of $22 trillion, they throw you a book deal. Hello, welcome to the show. The post-Valentine's Day edition.
It's a funny old game, this thing we call love, no one explains. It has two faces. I wish you the best. I wish you the worst. Pity and shame, forgiveness and blame, a kiss and then a curse. The bitterest of words, the gentlest of touch. Oh, they live side by side, and sometimes that is almost enough. Happy today, tomorrow who knows, I'll threaten to leave, and you'll beg me to go. We twist and we turn, we struggle with fate. Oh, the more that we love, darling, the deeper that we can hate. It's a funny old game, this thing we call love, no one explains. It has two faces, like the sun and the rain. Love has two faces.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, yes, news of the Olympic movement is back. What, you thought the Olympics were over? The movement never ends. Dateline Sochi in Russia. The year before the 2014 Winter Olympics are to begin, President Putin has demanded that a senior member of the Russian Olympic Committee be fired due to cost overruns in Sochi, the host city. The current price tag for the Sochi Games is $51 billion, making them the most expensive games in the history of the Olympics. More costly even than the much larger Summer Olympics held in London and Beijing. The games at the Black Sea Resort are considered a matter of national pride, one of Putin's top priorities. His decision came after he scolded officials over a two-year delay and huge cost overruns in the construction of the Sochi ski jump facilities. The Russian official involved had a company that was building the ski jump and its adjacent facilities before selling the stake to the state-owned company Sberbank. Yes, beautiful downtown Sberbank, last year. During his tour of Olympic venues, Putin fumed when he heard that the cost of the ski jump had soared from $40 million to $265 million, and the project was behind schedule. "You are doing a good job," Putin said, seething with sarcasm. Oh, so that's what Bush meant when he said to Brownie. Most countries that host the Olympics use public funds to pay for most of the construction of the sports venues and new infrastructure, roads and trains. The Russian government has gotten state-controlled companies and tycoons to foot more than half the bill. State-controlled companies, I guess, different from public funds. You tell me. Both the companies and the tycoons understand the importance of maintaining good relations with Putin. The costs constantly increased for the ski jump project because the company did not properly check the land and, as a result, picked a geologically challenging plot. Despite these setbacks, Russian officials have gone to great lengths to reiterate that everything in Sochi is now on schedule. Taking a cue from Putin, Russian officials sought to play down the high costs. The government expects to spend about $18 billion overall before the games begin. An official said it's unfair to compare Sochi's budget to that of previous Olympic Games because Russian organizers had to build most of the vital and costly infrastructure that was needed, roads, railways, tunnels, gas pipelines, from scratch. Good idea. Good location. The head of the local organizing committee said Sochi has special equipment that can make snow even in temperatures up to 59 degrees. Snow will be guaranteed in 2014. We'll remember that. The most expensive Olympics in human history. We don't know about Hedgehog Olympics. Hold your head high, Russia. The Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. Ladies and gentlemen, the new F-bomb, foreclosure. A miscreant has been caught and punished in the foreclosure mess. Not high-ranking, not totally low-hanging fruit. Somewhere in the middle. You may remember Eve Smith, in her first appearance on this broadcast, talked about the company DocX, which was a company to all appearances existed for the sole purpose of faking missing documents, creating fake documents to replace the documents that should have documented property ownership, title, so forth, that just didn't happen to exist, didn't happen to be existful, you see. So now comes Lorraine Brown. She faces sentencing in federal court for running a robo-signing operation in Georgia that pumped out tens of thousands of foreclosure documents that were fraudulently signed. Now she's being accused of approving fake foreclosure documents. She ran DocX, which handled processing for banks who didn't have the manpower or the time to do it themselves. You know, the documents. What, the manpower, the time. Linda Green was supposed to be checking the facts, reviewing the documents, and processing them. Instead, others were hired to sign Linda Green's name, some of them high school students. Michigan Attorney General spokesperson Joy Yearout says there were at least 1,000 fraudulently signed documents in Michigan. They charged Brown with racketeering. She faces a 136-count indictment in Missouri. She faces federal sentencing next month and sentencing in Michigan in May. Now, it's interesting. She got caught. There is no mention in the story that I just shared with you of the fact that DocX was not a freestanding company. It was a subsidiary of Lender Processing Services, which did way more work for banks in the foreclosure mess. But no chief executive of Lender Processing Services, which set up DocX apparently for the sole purpose of creating fake documents, no executive of DocX, of Lender Processing Services, LPS, has been yet indicted, at least according to this story. So, mid-hanging fruit, ladies and gentlemen. That's progress, isn't it? And now, news from outside the bubble. This is hush-hush stuff. So after you listen, you know, burn this radio. The full extent of the CIA's extraordinary rendition program has been laid bare with the publication of a report showing there's evidence that more than a quarter of the world's governments secretly offered support. This is from The Guardian. The 213-page report compiled by the Open Society Justice Initiative, a New York-based human rights group, says at least 54 countries cooperated with the global kidnapping, detention, and torture operation run by the CIA. You and me. That was mounted after 9/11. Many of those countries in Europe. So widespread and extensive was the participation of governments across the world, it's now clear the CIA could not have operated the program without their support, according to the report. There's no doubt that high-ranking Bush administration officials bear responsibility for authorizing human rights violations associated with secret detention and extraordinary rendition, but responsibility for those violations does not end with the United States. The states identified by the... that's from the report's opening paragraph. The states identified by the OSJI include Pakistan, Afghanistan, Egypt, and Jordan. Well, sure, they're on our payroll. Where the existence of secret prisons and the use of torture has been well documented for many years, the OSJI's rendition list also includes states such as Ireland, Iceland, and, well, they ran out of I countries, Cyprus, which are accused of granting covert support for the program by permitting the use of airspace and airports by aircraft involved in rendition flights. Canada, remember when Canada was nice? Canada not only permitted the use of its airspace, but provided information that led to one of its own nationals being taken to Syria, where he was held for a year and tortured, despite apparently being innocent, according to the report. Iran and Syria are identified as having participated in the rendition program. Iran, ladies and gentlemen. Gets more complex every day, doesn't it? Syria said it had been one of the most common destinations for rendered suspects, probably because of its history of torture, while Iran is said to have participated in the CIA's program by handing over 15 individuals to Kabul shortly after the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan in the full knowledge they would fall under U.S. control. Countries conspicuous by their absence from the list, Sweden and Finland are present, but no evidence of Norwegian involvement. Many Middle East countries did become involved in the rendition program. Israel did not. According to the report, many of the countries on the list are European. Germany, Spain, Portugal, and Austria are among them. France, the Netherlands, and Hungary are not. Georgia stands accused of involvement in rendition. Russia does not. Some countries such as Poland, Lithuania, and Romania actually hosted secret prisons on their territory. Who knows what went on there? Guess they do. The report says the British supported UK CIA rendition operations, interrogated people being secretly detained, allowed the use of British airports and airspace, arranged for one man to be rendered to Libya with his entire family, where he was subsequently tortured. Family that's tortured together stays together. And provided intelligence that allowed a second similar operation to take place. The report is entitled Globalizing Torture. More news from outside the bubble. The European Union and the United States have begun formal talks on a free trade agreement, paving the way for the biggest trade deal in history. The U.S. says everything is on the table in the talks. The deal would bring down trading barriers between the two biggest economies in the world. By everything is on the table, said the U.S. spokesperson, or actually the U.S. trade representative, Ron Kirk. The agricultural sector, he says, whether it's GMOs or other issues, Europe currently prohibits the sale in human food of genetically modified organisms. But on the other hand, Europe is right now having a horse meat scandal. So maybe the result of this trade agreement will be that we'll get to have a horse meat scandal too. That scandal took a new twist on Saturday, according to The Guardian, when it emerged that key intermediaries involved in the trade appeared to be using a secretive network of companies very similar to the network owned and operated by the convicted arms trafficker Victor Bout. The Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project identified DRAP trading in Cyprus as playing a pivotal role in shipping horse meat across Europe. Also yesterday, it was discovered that horse meat has not only appeared in supermarket burgers and lasagna, supermarket lasagna, but in school meals. Yeah, free trade with that. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Now I'm off for marriage, that cute little carriage, just as long as it's another. Now that love bug won't get me, I'll tell you the reason why. It's written in my little song, I'll sing it till I die. When that love bug bites you, he'll keep gnawing, 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 a-chewing and a-clawing and chawing you away. When that love bug bites you, he'll keep gnawing, 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 a-chewing and a-chawing until your dying day. Them by telephone. I can't see their pretty faces or the winking of an eye. I'll keep right on having fun. I'll never have to cry. When that love bug bites you, he'll keep gnawing, 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 a-chewing and a-clawing and chawing you away. When that love bug bites you, he'll keep gnawing, 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 a-chewing and a-chawing until you're dying. When that love bug bites you, he'll keep gnawing, 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 a-chewing and a-clawing and chawing you away. When that love bug bites you, he'll keep gnawing, 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 a-chewing and a-chawing until you're dying day.
Now news of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. The Catholic Church is in extraordinary denial over child sex abuse, and its absolute mess of a system for dealing with victims has lost all credibility. Who says that? Catholic priest. Father Kevin Dillon from the Melbourne, Australia suburb of Geelong says the church lacks accountability, is more interested in protecting its name and assets, and needs to overhaul the way it deals with abuse victims. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln is doing just fine. The church hierarchy has been in denial on the issue of sexual abuse, he told a parliamentary inquiry during a hearing in Geelong this week. For years, there's been an extraordinary denial that went on, he says, of the church. Monsignor Peter Garcia's career as a pastor in Los Angeles ended in 1984 after families alleged he'd sexually abused boys as young as seven in his parish. Garcia was later assigned to churches in Belen and Socorro, New Mexico, from 1985 through 1987, according to records made public as a result of the settlement between the L.A. Archdiocese and clergy abuse victims. In 1987, former Archbishop of Santa Fe Robert Sanchez helped decide that New Mexico pastors who supervised Garcia not be told about his history of sexual abuses, according to a letter written that year. Garcia left the priesthood in 2006, was never prosecuted. He died in 2009 at the age of 69, according to church records. L.A. Archdiocese records show Garcia preyed on Spanish-speaking boys of immigrant families during his 18-year career as a pastor, according to records posted online last month. But nice that he chose Spanish-speaking boys so that they could say Socorro. The name, ironic, the name of the New Mexico city to which he was sent. Look it up. And former Archbishop of Los Angeles, Roger Mahoney, blogged this week about his experience with the recent wave, tsunami of revelations about child sex abuse in his archdiocese. Quote, given all of the storms that have surrounded me and the archdiocese recently, God's grace finally helped me to understand. I'm not being called to serve Jesus in humility. Rather, I'm being called to something deeper, to be humiliated, disgraced, and rebuffed by many. I was not ready for this challenge. Ash Wednesday changed all that, and I see Lent 2013 as a special time to reflect deeply upon this special call. To be honest with you, I have not reached the point where I can actually pray for more humiliation. I'm only at the stage of asking for the grace to endure the level of humiliation at the moment. In the past several days, I've experienced many examples of being humiliated. In recent days, I've been confronted in various places by very unhappy people. I could understand the depth of their anger and outrage at me, at the church, at injustices that swirl around us. Thanks to God's special grace, I simply stood there, asking God to bless and forgive them. Unquote. Is that a narcissist or what? It's about him. It's about, babe, it's about you. Really? Pray more. My advice. News of the Godly, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, let me read the trades for you. This may make you wish you still had Roger Mahoney around, at least reading to, you know, talking to you when you hear this. Or maybe not. Who am I to judge? Drone manufacturers aim to change image. From National Defense Magazine. Yes, I'll read it for you. Because that's how I roll. The industry that supplies military robots and unmanned aerial vehicles has launched a rebranding campaign. Manufacturers of remotely piloted aircraft particularly worry that their products are known mostly for spying and killing, and not for their beneficial attributes. The group that represents the industry, the Association for Unmanned Vehicles International, or AUVSI, launched a website called increasinghumanpotential.org that's part of a broader marketing and messaging effort to paint these technologies in a positive light. AUVSI President and CEO Michael Toscano said the industry has to work harder at educating the public and policymakers in Washington on the technological benefits of unmanned systems, like the one you're listening to right now. Robotic systems are a key piece of the nation's technological future, he said during the association's annual programs review in McLean, Virginia, right near the CIA. Isn't that wild? Toscano said he wants to prevent negative PR from slowing down technological progress and development of new products. Years of drone wars and fiery rhetoric by privacy and human rights groups have tarnished the industry's image. Manufacturers are seeking to change the tone of the debate. If we don't field, we fail, said Toscano. While unmanned aircraft have been hugely successful in the military market, they've had a tougher time expanding their domestic applications in areas such as law enforcement. The barriers are not technological, but regulatory, Toscano said. Issues such as liability and insurance, he added, are the things we have to address to get technology in the field. Unquote. AUVSI is actively promoting the non-military side of drone technology in sectors such as agriculture, border security, search and rescue, humanitarian relief, and scientific research. Maritime robots are being marketed in the energy industry and in academia as tools for underwater exploration and research. The website will tell the good news about unmanned systems, said Toscano. We have to get those good stories out there, get the message out on the positive things that unmanned systems do. Robots, he said, execute dangerous missions that would put human lives at risk. Unquote. The FAA has not yet allowed drones in national airspace, although Congress has mandated that it do so by 2015. Privacy groups have sounded alarms about drones becoming instruments of the police state. Toscano said these are challenges that the industry can overcome. And from RadioInc.com, Federated Media is testing a service now in beta from Abacast that will allow listeners to skip songs while listening to their favorite radio station online. Abacast CEO Rob Green says this new feature satisfies 80 years of consumer demand. Quote, we've all reached for the button before to change stations when a song comes on we don't want to hear. We don't think listeners want to change the station most of the time, just a particular song, unquote. Commercials cannot be skipped. Apparently, there's no consumer demand for that. That's an editorial interjection that I couldn't help making when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in the Let Us Try department is working now to transform its civil works program, improve performance and responsiveness, increase customer satisfaction. Did you know that the Army Corps of Engineers had customers? Where's the customer response line? And improve the reliability of the nation's water infrastructure. That's according to Joellen Darcy, Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works, testifying before the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. The Army Corps of Engineers Civil Works Program, or CWP, will focus on better planning and budget methods, she said, to address large and looming challenges, which include an aging infrastructure and rising costs of repairing and rehabilitating components of infrastructure, including dams, locks, channels, levees, and other stuff that fails. Specific solutions, she said, are to streamline the funding process, complete funded projects more quickly. Just for reference, the New Orleans Hurricane Protection System, started in 1966, had not yet been completed when it failed in 2005. Yes, 40 years. Provide taxpayers with the best return on investments and better evaluate whether a project or group of related projects should remain a federal responsibility prior to making a substantial further investment. Yeah, that would be good. That would be a good thing to do. A need to standardize processes and approaches across all districts is also a priority. Meaning, I guess, the Corps of Engineers doesn't have standard procedures and approaches in all its districts. Now, 150 years after it was started, the Corps will continue to increase its collaborative efforts with non-federal interests, including tribes. For all its projects, the Corps of Engineers, she says, is applying engineering standards. I'm going to read that again. For all its projects, the United States Army Corps of Engineers is applying engineering standards. Well, I wouldn't have thought of that. Thank God they're on the case. And is using a risk-informed process in its approach, she said. Meaning, uh-oh. Let us try, ladies and gentlemen. The good people at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. You probably noticed that Hillary Clinton is no longer our Secretary of State. She's been supplanted by John Kerry. She resigned for reasons really unknown at this point, at almost the same time. CNN, just before it decided to become all poop ship news all the time, had a house cleaning of its commentariat. Among those who are no longer going to be punditizing on CNN are the political odd couple of James Carville and Mary Madeline. She, of course, a Republican, he a Democrat, and not only a Democrat but a close advisor to the Clintons, since he helped engineer, or was one of the people who helped engineer Bill Clinton's rise to the presidency in 1992. Bill Clinton made the news this week as well when a letter from Richard Nixon to Bill Clinton surfaced, became public. It appears that letter, written to Clinton just as he was about to assume office from Nixon, began something of a series of conversations between the two. Talk about odd couples. Clinton and Nixon. Nixon's first letter hailed Clinton for the strength that Nixon perceived in him, which Nixon perceived to be appropriately presidential. Yes, it does sound like there's an episode of Clinton something coming on this broadcast next.
Clinton something, the wilderness years.
Look at this, James. Hmm? A handwritten card from President Emma Dinichat.
No, that's a collector's item right there. What's it say?
Merry Christmas from your friends at Iran Revolutionary Guards.
No, kind of sweet.
Yeah. Hey, listen, thanks for dropping by.
Oh, no problem. Mary and I were cleaning out our desk at CNN, so we were in the hood.
You guys shared a desk?
Mm-hmm. Left drawers were for her talking points, right drawers were mine.
Isn't that a little backwards?
Well, we thought it might confuse thieves.
No, I mean, keeping your talking points in a desk.
High drives.
Got it. Wow. This I gotta take with me.
Hey, go for it. Only the president can't take his gifts.
Didn't stop Bill.
Whatever did.
You got that right. Look at this. An elephant carved out of ivory from the Pakistani ambassador.
Wait. So you kill an elephant to make a mini version of the elephant you just killed out of part of why you killed him.
And if you look closely, it's an Indian elephant.
Oh.
That's the crap I'm not going to miss. A world of people so set in their ways they can't listen to reason from someone like me.
Hey, listen. It's like the new guy at CNN told Mary and me when he dumped us. I envy you your freedom. We and you are the freest people in D.C. right now. At least until you decide about, you know, when.
2016? Mm-hmm. I got a little Joe Biden problem to deal with first.
Hillary, Joe Biden has a track record. He builds up years of goodwill and respect, and then he pisses it away in a 6-month presidential campaign. Done it twice. Be crazy to do it again.
I know. But this time he's got the big guy running interference for him.
You don't think the president knows better than to take sides? What's in it for him?
What was in it for him to take time in his victory speech to thank everyone to the left of Glenn Beck? Except Bill.
Hey, missus, nothing looks less presidential than not being above the fray in a fight that can't do anything for you. Hell, this guy never even got involved in other people's elections when it could have helped him. He preferred spending his time filling out NCAA brackets.
I suppose. Oh, my God.
Where is that?
An autographed photo of David Cameron in his Speedo.
National Archives.
Right. Or National Enquirer.
National something. Hey, speaking of which, Bill around?
I think he's upstairs. He was talking about wanting to go to bed early.
Hmm. Big day of do-good in the head.
Would you believe it, James? Right now, he's the only one of us who's gainfully employed.
Well, I was going to go rattle his cage, but he's probably deep in dreamland.
Clinton Global Initiative, making the world a better place one place at a time.
Jesus, Mr. President, it's come to that. You're answering your own phone. I'm dead, and even I don't do that.
Mr. President,
Yeah. Man,
it's been years since I've heard from you. Since way back before my little thing.
Well, that happened, of course, after I got here. Mm-hmm. But before Haldeman got the Jews to run this place to set me up with reliable phone service. By the way, I am required by those people to inform you that I'm taping this call.
So you're calling me from heaven?
Mm-hmm.
Damn. That means all that God in heaven stuff really is true.
Oh, horse crap. This means you shouldn't have had that nacho right before bedtime.
Well, in either case, I'm assuming you're calling for some reason.
Me? No. No, I just sit around here all day making random phone calls to former chief executives. In other words, yes. Look, I understand that your wife is going to run for president.
Well, she's certainly thinking about it, but how did you...
Haldeman got them to set up the internet here, too.
Man, that's not sounding so bad.
No, it's horrible. There's no arena. Mm-hmm. Nobody to defeat.
Yeah.
Like the kids say, it sucks the eggs. But now listen.
Yeah.
You and I both know that there's nothing harder than running for president. It saps every iota of your whole supply of iotas.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about it, and I'm not sure it's something a woman should be doing. Like combat. It's work for a man.
I guess your internet's a little slow. They just started letting women in combat.
Well, it's the stupidest goddamn thing I've ever heard of. Let's say you've got an important dinner party with your counterpart at some other company or country. Mm-hmm. And now your wife says, oh, I'm sorry, honey. I can't help with the guest list. I have to go practice my hand grenade technique.
Well, you know, it's probably just...
You know, I'm just imagining Pat in a submarine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It would drive her crazy. No place to hang the goddamn dish towels.
Mr. President, can I level with you?
Mr. President, let me tell you something. Mm. That's what I hate most about this place. People are lovely with you all day long. It makes it so much harder to figure out what the hell they're up to.
Well, in any case, I think Hillary would make a much better president than I did. She's at the right time of her life where she's, you know, free of distractions.
You mean she's old?
If I were leveling with you, that's what I'd mean, yeah. It's going to be a lot harder for her to get knocked off her path by the sorts of things that, frankly, bedeviled both you and me.
You mean quirks of human personality? You're saying she's too old for that?
You know what, Mr. President?
Yeah.
I know you called me, but I get to thank you and get off the line for two reasons.
Yeah. Really?
One, I got a big meeting with the Chase Bank people in the morning.
Yeah.
And two, because when you come right down to it, this is my dream. You take care.
Nothing to take care of. I'm dead.
Youthful angst and middle-aged powerlessness.
Together, they add up to Clinton something, the wilderness years.
Comes a rainstorm, put your rubbers on your feet. Comes a snowstorm, you can find a little heat. Comes love, nothing can be done. Comes a fire, you know just what to do. Blow a tire, you can buy another shoe. But comes love, nothing can be done. Don't try hiding, 'cause there isn't any use. You'll start sliding when your heart turns on the juice. Comes a headache, you can lose it in a day. Comes a toothache, see a dentist right away. Comes love, nothing can be done. Isn't any use. You'll start sliding when your heart turns on the juice. Comes a rainstorm, put your rubbers on your feet. Comes a snowstorm, find a little heat. But comes love,
the world you're listening to the show, or else you're just letting it play unheeded in the background. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
A cousin of the late Emmett Till wonders if Lil Wayne understands just how damaging it was when he rapped a vulgar reference to the African-American U.S. teen whose death in 1955 became a significant moment in the civil rights movement. Erica Gordon Taylor says Till's family would like an apology from Lil Wayne, the New Orleans-based rapper, for the brief but disturbing lyric on a remix of a rap thing called Karate Chop. She'd like the platinum-selling rapper to understand how his comparison of a sex act to the 14-year-old Chicago native's tortured death in Mississippi is hurtful to the black community. It was a heinous murder, she said. He was brutally beaten and tortured, and he was shot, wrapped in barbed wire, and tossed in the Tallahatchie River. So to compare a woman's anatomy, the gateway of life, to the ugly face of death, it just destroyed me. The remix with Lil Wayne guesting was leaked on the internet last weekend. Epic Records now says it regrets the unauthorized remix version and that it was employing great efforts to pull it down. The brief reference, 7 words, will be stricken from the song when it's officially released later. The words were, "I'm gonna beat her like Emmett Till." Epic chairman and CEO L.A. Reid personally reached out to Gordon Taylor in a conference call that included the Reverend Jesse Jackson to explain and apologize. But Lil Wayne has made no comment. nor has he attempted to apologize so far. So only, you know, the record company has feelings. None then? Epic apologized. The Weather Channel is learning the Mississippi's geography slowly. The Weather Network has apologized for referring to Hattiesburg as Johannesburg, Mississippi, in post-tornado coverage last week. At a Knight Foundation lunch, Jonah Lehrer apologized for plagiarism, fabrication, and other ethical lapses in his articles and books, and in the great chain of apologies. Now, the Knight Foundation is apologizing for paying Lehrer $20,000 to speak at that lunch. It revealed it invited Lehrer to speak after he'd already lost jobs with The New Yorker and Wired for repeatedly misrepresenting his work as original. Apropos of the horse meat scandal, Britain's largest supermarket, Tesco, was dragged into the scandal when it admitted that a second of its beef products was heavily contaminated. It withdrew contaminated burgers 4 weeks ago. Now, it says tests have shown its everyday value spaghetti bolognese contained in excess of 60% horse meat. It's running in the Derby. It's got so much horse meat in it. The supermarket apologized, saying it recognized it had failed customers twice. The British Food Standards Agency now says chicken and pork products should be tested, amid speculation that chicken could have been injected with waste from pork and beef production process to increase its weight and value. This would be particularly sensitive, as Jews and Muslims are forbidden from eating pork and Hindus are not allowed to eat beef. I guess Christians are okay. Speaking of Christians, the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod apologized for his role in the debacle that led him to publicly reprimand a pastor in Newtown, Connecticut, for praying at an interfaith service following the mass shooting there. This is a chain of apologies. It started when that Lutheran pastor apologized for participating in an interfaith prayer vigil that supposedly broke denominational rules against joint worship. The denomination's president now says his request for an apology from the priest who did apologize sparked a blaze of criticism from within the denomination and outside of it. In retrospect, I look back and see I could have done things differently, said Matthew C. Harrison. My deepest desire was to bring unity, or at least avoid a greater division in the Synod over this issue. As president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, I take responsibility for this debacle. I handled it poorly, multiplying the challenges. I increased the pain of a hurting community. And he apologized for the embarrassment due to the media coverage that came with the controversy. It's the damn media. I apologize for them. Speaking of the media, UK broadcaster ITV has apologized for not blurring a picture of the cover of an Italian magazine which published revealing shots of Kate Middleton. The TV company says it's a deeply regrettable error to show pictures of a pregnant Middleton in a bikini. The royal household had described the publication of the pictures taken without permission while Middleton and her husband Prince William were on holiday in the Caribbean island of Moustique as a clear breach of the couple's privacy. The pictures were flashed on screen during a discussion of the day's news. Yeah, it's news that the member of the royal family is in Moustique. You don't understand news, do you? Apparently not. I'm just letting you think about the idea of news. The incident came just months after a host on the same network, Philip Schofield, held out a list of alleged pedophiles, which was visible to viewers during an interview with the prime minister. At the time, ITV's director of television, Peter Fincham, said he was confident this sort of thing won't happen again. The program issued a statement that said, "Unfortunately, we accidentally showed an unblurred image of the magazine cover, which briefly showed the photographs. This was a deeply regrettable error, and we are very sorry." And a former member of the Westboro Baptist Church in Topeka, Kansas. You may have heard of that church. Its members picketed funerals of dead military men. Well, a former member has apologized to the mother of a soldier killed in Afghanistan in an interview with Anderson Cooper. Libby Phelps Alvarez apologized to Sherry and Randy Wyatt for picketing the funerals of their fallen soldiers like their son. Alvarez. I don't know what I was thinking. Alvarez is the granddaughter of Fred Phelps, the founder of the Westboro Baptist Church. "I just feel sad, and I'm sorry," Alvarez told Cooper. "I thought I was doing the right thing, but I was just hurting people." Westboro members set up picket lines outside soldiers' funerals and hold signs that say things like, "Thank God for IEDs." I think they thought they meant IUDs, but Alvarez recently left the church, and several other members of the Phelps family have defected recently. Well, when you're losing members of your own family, you really do have to ask yourself, is this a viable faith? The Apologies of the Week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Rod, you don't have to whisper. The U.S. Department of Interior has found no scientific error in a high-profile research paper by its scientists on sightings of polar bears drowned in open water following a storm, according to documents released by Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. This is another black eye for the Interior Department's Office of Inspector General, which has waged a controversial campaign against the paper's authors for nearly 3 years. Vigorously pursuing unspecified allegations about a peer-reviewed observational note in the journal Polar Ecology, which galvanized public understanding of the effects of sea ice loss and other climate changes in the Arctic. The case remains in an open status while the office is evaluating response from the Bureau. But apparently, the polar bear study stands. Arctic sea ice volume, speaking of which, has declined by 36% in the autumn and 9% in the winter between 2003 and 2012, a British-led team of scientists has discovered. Researchers used new data from the European Space Agency's Cryosat-2 satellite, spanning 2010 to 2012, and data from NASA's IceSat satellite. They got good names, those satellites. From 2003 to 2008 to establish the volume of sea ice in the Arctic, they found that 2003 to 2008, autumn volumes of ice averaged 11,900 kilometers cubed? Really? Kilometers? But from 2010 to 2012, the average volume had dropped to 7,600, whatever that unit is, a decline of 4,300. The data reveals that thick sea ice has disappeared from a region to the north of Greenland, the Canadian archipelago, and to the northeast of Svalbard, says Dr. Catherine Giles, who co-authored the report. The findings confirm the continuing decline in Arctic sea ice volume simulated by the Pan-Arctic Ice Ocean Modeling and Assimilation System, PIOMAS, which estimates the volume of Arctic sea ice and had been checked using earlier submarine mooring and satellite observations before. January was warmer. Well, let's see. We have this. Climate change is threatening the survival of a number of Asian bird species, including those in India, a new study warns. The research conducted by Durham University and BirdLife International says that many avian species from the region are likely to suffer from climate change. They'll require not just enhanced protection of important and protected sites, but also better management of the wider countryside, the study says. In extreme cases, birds may be required to be physically moved to climatically suitable areas for survival, says the report recently published in the journal Global Change Biology. Move those birds. The globally average temperatures for 2012, temperature, marked the 10th warmest year since record-keeping began in 1880. It also marked the 36th consecutive year with a global temperature above the 20th century average. The last below-average annual temperature was in 1976. Including last year, all 12 years to date in this century rank among the 14 warmest in the 133-year period of record. Only 1 year during last century, 1998, was warmer than 2012. Most areas of the world experienced higher than average annual temperatures, including most of North and South America, most of Europe and Africa, Western, Southern, and Far Eastern Asia. Most of Alaska, far western Canada, Central Asia, parts of Eastern and Equatorial Pacific, Southern Atlantic, and parts of the Southern Ocean were notably cooler than average, and the Arctic experienced a record-breaking ice melt. And in 2012, the contiguous United States, CONUS, annual average temperature of 55.3 degrees was 3.2 degrees above the 20th century average and was the warmest year in the period since records started being kept way back in 1895. The 2012 annual U.S. temperature was 1 degree warmer than the previous record warm year of 1998. Since 1895, the CONUS has observed a long-term temperature increase of about 0.13 degrees per decade. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. That's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world, you've heard of it, at two different locations on the internet, live and archived, whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast through KCRW.com and through iTunes. You've heard of that. And it'd be just like Lil Wayne apologizing if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, in exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and a playlist of the music heard here on, just part of the overflowing buffet of delights at harryshearer.com. And you might want to join the more than 81,000 folks following the host of this broadcast at The Harry Shearer on Twitter. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.